everyone. My name is Robert William Fernandez. I was born in Lima, Peru, grew up in New Jersey, and currently I'm a PhD student at Yale studying molecular biochemistry and biophysics. I am glad to be here with Anous and Deepika at the podcast at the end of the day.
Robert, thank you so much for coming to our podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and you came all the way from?
New Haven, Connecticut, at Yale University.
Just for this podcast.
Yes. Any reason to be in New York.
Right. And Robert, let's start this podcast with you coming to America at the age of 5.
Yes. I do not remember that day. My youngest memory growing up in Peru was maybe 2 or 3, where my cousins were playing soccer, mm-hmm. and I wanted to be the goalie. And my mom was like, no, it's too dangerous. He's only 3, and they're all like 10. Uh-huh. But coming to the actual United States at the age of 5, I do not remember exactly all of the details. I remember that we were, my father, his sister lived in Jersey. Mm-hmm. So we came to the US and in New Jersey specifically, and stayed with them for a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And when I was researching on you, we came to know that you were undocumented, and then when you were starting college,
yes,
that's the moment when you realized, okay, there's something wrong.
Yes.
Right. Tell me about that story.
Sure. So it started in high school, and I always had a feeling that something was off. Like, I think maybe like my mom told me like that I was undocumented, but I never really understood what it meant.
Yeah.
Or the limitations, and it wasn't until I was applying for colleges where originally my dream school at the time, like 17-year-old high school, Rob, was I want to go to Rutgers Business School. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I need to fill out this form, and it says you need a social security number. So I remember calling my mom, and I was like, hey, Ma, so like, what's my social security number? And she's like, you don't have one. And I didn't, at that moment, I was confused, and that's kind of when it sank in. Like, I am undocumented, mm-hmm. so I don't have a social, so I can't go to all of these different colleges, state colleges that I wanted to go to. So at the time, my options was go to community college, mm-hmm. and I ended up going to Union County College to study business administration. And during that time, I was still undocumented.
Right.
And it was there at community college where I knew that I was undocumented, but I didn't want that to hold me back. That just meant that I need to work harder. And I remember, like, it was my last semester where I was finishing my business degree. I had to take a biology class. Mm-hmm. It was between astronomy or biology. And I was like, well, let me try a biology. Mm-hmm. So I remember the professor's name, Dr. Felton. She was teaching introductory biology. And this was the first time I learned about, like, Darwin's voyage to the Galapagos and all of these different biology topics. And for some reason, this really excited me a lot, mm-hmm. where I went on to do an independent study project with Dr. Felton on common misconceptions about evolution. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, I really want to do biology after this. So what are my options? And I wasn't the only student that was undocumented at the time. I had a good friend of mine, Andre, who also went to community college. He was also undocumented. He was from Brazil. Mm-hmm. And he was like, look, I heard that these CUNY systems, they accept people like us. We should apply to these things. Mm-hmm. And as a transfer student, I was like, okay, that's great. That's what I'm going to do. But I also wanted to, like, back then, like, I don't think there were too many resources. Like, if you're undocumented, what are my options?
Right.
All I heard was private schools could accept you and Ivy League schools. Mm-hmm. So I think I applied to Columbia and Brown, and like, they just rejected me. And then I remember there was a college like fair at Union County College. And like, as a business major, like I was pretty proud of how hard I worked. So I had like a 3.98 GPA, and I was like, I want to transfer to your college. I want to study biology. Mm-hmm. And I do all of these extracurricular activities, but I don't have a social.
Right.
And one by one, each college rejected me, or they said, you have to pay out of state tuition. Mm-hmm. And then that's like, okay, I don't want to stop here. So the CUNY system it is. Mm-hmm. And that's where like a big part of my life changed pretty much there.
So you did your bachelor's in your college?
Yes.
And then what?
So after I finished my bachelor's in biotechnology at your college, I decided to go towards a PhD. Mm-hmm. But granted, I was still undocumented at your college.
Right.
But what's different here is that I had mentors that cared about me, that invested in me, that gave me a place for me in the lab. And I, at first, I was like, let me get a master's in biotechnology. Mm-hmm. But I never knew what a PhD was at all. Mm-hmm. Like, it wasn't until I went to ABRACAM, Annual Biomedical Research for Minority Students. They have this conference, and I got a travel award to present my work there, what I learned what a PhD was. Mm-hmm. And ever since then, I was like, okay, great. I want to do a PhD. I didn't know where science would take me. I just knew for me, mm-hmm. this was my way out of being undocumented.
And you are doing your PhD at Yale University on molecular biophysics and biochemistry.
Yes.
And you're about to be, do you call it graduate when you've completed your PhD? I don't know, because I've never done PhD.
So your question. So technically, I'm a PhD candidate right now. Okay. So I guess I could be a PhD graduate, yeah.
Okay. Nice. So, Robert, like, listen to your story right now. So, you have come a long way, starting as an undocumented immigrant. And now, you are a citizen now.
Yes.
In this long, long journey, what was the hardest part for an immigrant like you in terms of career and in terms of life?
Let's see. Like, my big journey from going to undocumented to being a U.S. citizen, mm-hmm. I guess I had several difficult times, and one of the lowest was, okay, so when I went to Queens College, I worked in a lab, and it wasn't a good environment. But back then I was like, when I finished community college, science is my way out. So I need to do research. Mm-hmm. And after that bad experience, I went from working in a very famous virology lab mm-hmm. to working at a deli on 34th Street. Mm-hmm. And that experience, one, taught me how to be humble, but also it taught me the value of hard work. Like, I saved up enough money to transfer to York, and I've been in New York for like at least a year, so now I could afford in-state tuition.
Right.
So one of the hardest things was like thinking I was gonna finally get out of my undocumented status and then just losing it and then just going back to where I came from. Mm-hmm. And one of the other difficult parts in my life was the absence of mentors. Like, pursuing a PhD, let alone a bachelor's degree in science, it's very difficult if you don't have the right mentors.
Right.
And at first, when I was in high school, I didn't have any science mentors. Like, the biology professor or the calculus professor pretty much like gave up on me. I remember being kicked out of like the biology class and transferring to a business class. Mm-hmm. And that's not because I wasn't passionate about a topic at a time, but I was working several odd jobs when I was in high school.
Right.
But it wasn't until I first understood like what the impact of mentorship was when it kind of like, even though like I don't know where science is going to lead me, mm-hmm. it kind of helped me keep going forward toward that path. And that's pretty much what I would say like can take someone out of like their lowest point, like having someone that like they can depend on, someone that can guide them.
Right.
How did you find those mentors in your life?
Those were all just like by luck. So. One of my mentors is Dr. Simon. So she used to study, be a professor at York College.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember one day I was taking a biology laboratory course, and she just came up to me one day and she was like, hey, are you interested in doing research? And this is, I'm at York, right? So I already had a really bad research experience at Queens College.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I don't know if I want to do this to myself,
mm-hmm.
but I also, I need a way out, and I need to learn how to trust people again.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided, okay, let's do it. Let's see how it goes.
Mm-hmm.
And from that one experience, hey, do you want to do research? That led to me doing research in her laboratory for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
We worked on at least two or three publications together. And like that led me, because she invested in me, the whole biology department also invested in me. I ended up going to like summer research programs. I was well prepared for a PhD. It was kind of like a domino effect. Like one person invested in you,
right.
More and more and more people invest in you.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was like how I found my mentors at York College. But even at Yale, it was very, very like random.
Mm-hmm.
When I started Yale, I finished my bachelor's degree, say May 2013. I started Yale literally next month.
Mm-hmm.
You're supposed to start in like August or September,
mm-hmm.
but I didn't want to take a break, so I emailed a whole bunch of professors, hey, mm-hmm. I'm here, can you take me to do research in your laboratory? I want to work. And one professor, Michael Cole, got back to me and he was like, sure, you could try research for a month.
Mm-hmm.
So he works on C. elegans, which are these very small nematodes.
Mm-hmm.
And with him, we worked on understanding how neurons communicate and how they regulate this egg laying behavior in this worm.
Mm-hmm.
But in short, I remember doing research with him just for a month. And I had a good mentor at the time, a postdoc, Kevin Collins. Mm-hmm. And like by the end of June came, I was like, I don't want to stop. And then Michael was like, okay, you could stay until the end of July. And then by the end of July, like, I don't want to stop. So, okay, you could stay until August. Yeah. So it's like, it was a really good experience. From that short 3 months, I was able to contribute to a publication. Mm-hmm. And in addition to that, one of the directors of the biology program of the PhD was right across from our lab. And his name is Tony Kuleski. And he literally said one day, hey, Rob, I think you should apply for the Polynesiosaurus Fellowship. I think you'll be a good fit.
Right.
I never heard of that fellowship before, but he was like, hey, you should apply for this. Mm-hmm. And because of that, like that one conversation, I ended up applying for it and I ended up receiving a fellowship.
Right.
And it's just like, it's just been like, I've just been having like luck mm-hmm. in finding these mentors.
Right.
So in terms of finding mentors, that to me was by chance.
Yeah.
And I agree, there has to be a better way of how to find mentors in your field, especially when you're just starting off.
Right.
In terms of mentorship, not like the way like I was able to find like or maintain proper relationship with my mentors is because we normally have one part in common. So for example, my research mentor, he is the mentor I go for research,
right,
mostly. Tony Kuleski, he is a general mentor that I pretty much go for anything going on at Yale. But I also have other mentors that are for diversity, like Andrew Marenker and Enrique de la Cruz are my diversity mentors.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, I don't expect a mentor to like help me with all of these different things.
Okay.
It's about seeking a mentor that has a common goal as you. And that's kind of how I went with my approach of mentorship. But also, as when you're mentoring students, you also have to make sure that you don't have one mentoring style, because one mentoring style does not fit everybody. You have to make sure, what are the students' expectations, what are my expectations, mm-hmm. and how can we find a common goal there? So you always have to be very flexible about your mentorship style depending on the student and depending on like the common factor you two have in common.
You know, like when you're talking to your mentor,
yes,
how comfortable one has to be, how vulnerable you can be in front of your mentor?
Ha, that's a good question. So that depends on the mentor also.
Mm-hmm.
So I know there are certain things I can speak to about my research mentor, Michael, that I can't speak to other mentors.
Okay.
So mostly it's because Michael kind of saw me from like the beginning. So I did research with him in the summer of 2013 when I started right grad school.
Mm-hmm.
And this is when I was like at my best. Like I was like, I was dedicated, I want to do research. And then my first year of grad school, I was almost a pretty much a grad school dropout. Like
mm-hmm.
I went from being undocumented mm-hmm. to being a permanent resident.
Right.
So I was going through identity issues. I was going through some health issues, and also I was the only Latino in my department.
Mm-hmm.
So I was feeling isolated, or something we call imposter syndrome, where we feel like we don't belong in higher education.
Right.
And all of that was kind of like a really bad combination to deal with as a first year grad student.
Mm-hmm.
So my first year I did poorly in my classes. And I remember at the end of my first semester, I had a talk to the director of graduate studies. And I had to tell him, look, this is what I'm going through. So I pretty much like remember like that long like walk to his office. And normally I know back then I didn't like telling people I was undocumented in terms of faculty,
mm-hmm.
just because I didn't want them to feel bad for me.
Right, right.
But I can't hide who I was, so I had to embrace it. So I told Mark Solomon, like, look, this is what I'm going through this first semester. It's not because I'm negligent on my schoolwork, mm-hmm. but I want to be here. And he said, it's going to be a difficult path. But like, if you're willing to do it, then I'm here to support you.
Mm-hmm.
And after I was vulnerable and I told him, this is my truth, I went from having pretty much like all C's to all A's after a year
mm-hmm.
and passing my qualifying exams. But during that time, that was possible because Michael saw me when I started there as a summer research student.
Mm-hmm.
And after my first year, after I ended up joining his lab, he was the one who had my back when like some professors, like at the end of the first year, they decide, how's every student going? What student is struggling academically?
Mm-hmm.
I remember pretty much Michael, he had a colonoscopy scheduled that day. They kind of messed up his colonoscopy, and like he had like a 20% chance of dying.
Mm-hmm.
And while he was in the hospital, he wrote this very long email as to why I deserved to be in the program.
Yeah.
when he was like fighting for his life. Wow. And because of that, I'm pretty much extremely loyal to my PI, like, because he saw what I was at my best, and he knew that I was struggling during my first year, mm-hmm. but that's not a definition of who I am. Right. So, and after that, me and Michael were able to have like a stronger relationship and talk about like topics that underrepresented students in sciences field, mm-hmm. or like why it's difficult to pretty much be a minority in STEM. So it's pretty much like it's okay to be vulnerable with some mentors as long as you feel like they're willing to have your back for it.
And Robert, we are almost at the end of the podcast, and I know you have started a project in 2017. Yes. What project is that? Let's hear something about the project.
Sure. So it's called Scientifico Latino. We're just like an open access STEM platform for unrepresented students in mm-hmm. STEM, from undergraduate to grad school, in order to prepare you for an academic career and finding all of these resources. For example, a lot of my mentors apply for this fellowship, apply for that summer program. Mm-hmm. If I didn't have them, I wouldn't have found those opportunities. Right. So we wanted to make all those opportunities available for anybody, regardless if they had a mentor or not.
Mm-hmm. If there is anyone out there, anyone of our audience who wants to reach out to you for career guidance, mm-hmm. would you be comfortable sharing your contact?
Of course. Mm-hmm. They can always reach out to me at rfernandez718@gmail.com mm-hmm. or at scientificolatino@gmail.com.
And if you're emailing Robert, make sure you mention at the end of the day in the subject title so that Robert knows where these emails are coming from.
And we would like to thank the English Speaking Union, ARNIC, for providing us the space for recording this conversation. If you are a new immigrant in the US and if you are based in New York, definitely get in touch with ESU ARNIC because they provide free English language classes and professional development classes.
And yeah, please do subscribe to our podcast on YouTube, Spotify, iTunes, wherever you find us.
Yes, on that note, it's time to say bye-bye. Robert, thank you once again.
Thank you for having me. And I'm glad to have been a part of this podcast at the end of the day.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a lovely time.
Bye-bye.
See ya.
Hey guys, a quick note. If you have a personal story that you think might be helpful to the newly arriving immigrants in the US, please contact us. We would love to feature you in our podcast. Go to our website, podcast@theendoftheday.com, and write to us by going to the feedback section.
And by the way, if you love this podcast, you can support us with a small donation. Your help will enable us to continue producing more episodes. The link to support our podcast is in the description below.